Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Brush. She's Marjorie. And it seems like forever we've been identifying Andras Nelson as the incoming Boston Symphony Orchestra conductor. But finally, he's really here, ready to take charge. Here with us in Studio 3 for a look at what's in store under his leadership are Brian McCreath. Brian is the host with 99.5 WCRB and a producer for the Boston Symphony Orchestra radio broadcast. And the host of the BSO radio broadcast, you may have heard of him, WCRB's Ron Della Chiesa, a.k.a. Radio Ron. It's great to see you both, gentlemen.
Absolutely. Great to have you guys in here. Now, I'm dying to know, because you've already seen him up at Tanglewood, where I guess he was riding around recklessly in a golf cart up there. But, Ron, what'd you think? You saw him up close and personal.
I saw him last night. He was. They introduced him to a gala dinner at Symphony Hall, and they showed a little video. Then he came out to a standing ovation.
Really?
Looked very dapper. And his beautiful wife was sitting down front, Christina Opelias.
Now, what is she, soprano, mezzo-soprano?
She's a soprano. She just sang Manon Lescaut at Covent Garden with Jonas Kaufman together in a very, shall we say, risque production.
Really?
What does risque mean?
Gorgeous.
What does risque
She's
mean?
Gorgeous.
Why are you laughing in a risque way, Brian?
Hey, look, if you look at the pictures on the internet of exactly what Christina Opelias, her costume was.
Jennifer Lopez sort of thing? Wondered how the
dress
stayed
on? There's only a select group of operatic sopranos that would be able to pull that off. Let me put it that way.
Okay. You know what I love? Speaking of his wife, by the way, if you go to the BSO website, they mention that Kaufman and Opelias are going to be performing with him, and they describe it as follows. It features two close colleagues of the conductor as soloists, not mentioning that one of those close colleagues happens to be his wife.
Okay.
So what do you think of him? You've spoken to him a lot, yes?
Yeah. No, I have spoken to him a lot. And he is as engaged and excited a person as you can imagine. He thinks that, from what I can tell, he believes that this is a gigantic opportunity for him as well as for the BSO. I mean, he's very excited to come here. He has been someone on the radar of every major orchestra in the world for years now. And he's been
He's 35 years old. How can it be for years?
Oh, here's the story, Jim. Let me tell you what happened when he was a teenager. He was playing in the Latvian National Opera. And an older gentleman by the name of Maris Janssens, the legendary conductor from Latvia, was in town with his orchestra, with I think at the time it was Oslo Philharmonic. They were playing. They had a problem with a trumpet player. Andras was a trumpet player.
Mm-hmm.
A trumpet player from the Oslo Phil couldn't make the concerts. He fell sick or something like that. They sent a note to Andras, who happened to be in the audience, saying, could you go get your trumpet?
Andras
goes home, grabs his trumpet, comes back, sits down for the second half, and plays second trumpet, I think, on Symphony Fantastique by Berlioz. This is a gigantic piece of music, right? So Maris calls Andras into the dressing room afterwards and says, what can I pay you? I need to pay you the freelance rate for what, you know, whatever Riga pays for freelance musicians. Andras says, you know, don't pay me. What I'd like from you is the chance to observe you conduct and rehearse.
Oh, my God.
That was the first moment of a mentorship that launched Andras at age 19, basically, into the life of a conductor.
Do you notice Ron is weeping during the story?
Let's get back to the first question, because you digressed, Ron. You saw him at Tanglewood. Tell us.
Well, you know, first of all, his conducting style. You know, we all know Seiji Ozawa was so beautiful to watch. He is too, but he's got a different style than Ozawa. Ozawa was very balletic.
Yeah.
Andras pulls the music literally out of the orchestra. You know, he leans in and pulls it. And so you can imagine how the players react to that. I mean, the anticipation of his arrival into Symphony Hall has been extraordinary. We haven't seen anything like that since Ozawa, or even before that, Leinsdorf.
Yeah,
but it's, you know, he's young, he's...
And the orchestra players, a lot of them are much older.
Yeah, but that's interesting. Yeah. How do older players who've been around a lot longer than the... is he 35 or 36?
He's 35.
35-year-old conductor. Is there no skepticism of this kid? And he is a kid in the grand scheme of things. Is there no skepticism of the kid? Why are you laughing like that, Brian?
Ron, take it first.
The era of the tyrannical conductor coming in and, you know, browbeating everybody, that's over. I think that these older musicians are looking for somebody they can work with who is younger and who can take them in a new direction and who has a fresh eye toward these scores.
Is this part, is part of the excitement? I don't mean to take away from because I haven't met him. I've only read about him. I've heard you part of your interviews, Brian.
Yeah.
Is part of it what he follows? I mean, there is a Jeff Edgers wrote a piece in the Globe where he's talking about giving some advice.
Open letter, right.
And one of the great lines in his open letter is he's talking about James Levine, who obviously had a pretty tumultuous 7 years, sick a lot, not here a lot.
Yeah.
And he said he was least accessible arts leader, a cross between Howard Hughes and Ned Johnson, meaning from Fidelity, who you'd never see. Is part of it, thank God he's gone and we've got a new kid, or is it all about Andras Nelson?
I think all due respect, everybody acknowledges James Levine as one of the great conductors of our time. And also, I think everybody acknowledges that was a tough road.
Right.
And I think that people are very excited. I mean, it's even been said to me by people publicly that, part of the pick of Andras was a bit of a reaction to the problems with James Levine. And the skepticism, actually, yes, it does exist. I mean, these are the best players in the world at their jobs. And they've seen every variety of conductor you can put on a podium. And they're a little skeptical.
So
sure.
It's prove yourself. Is that is
There's
that
a bit of that. But there's also a huge amount of excitement because they've seen the spark. I mean, they've seen what can happen on a few occasions. Let's actually listen to Mark Volpe because he's the managing director for the BSO. I asked him when he knew that Andras was a candidate they should consider. This is Volpe 1, and when did he recognize that as they were in a crisis with James Levine that Andras Nelsons was a guy they've got to really consider? Here's what he said.
He wasn't available to do the performances in Boston, but he was available to do the Carnegie performance on virtually no rehearsal. He came here quickly, and I knew not that he would be the music director, but I knew there was something very, very special about the guy right from the first 10 minutes of the rehearsal. And it was clear he had the orchestra's attention as well.
So this is Mahler's Ninth Symphony at Carnegie Hall when James Levine pulled out at the last minute. It was actually right after he resigned. They didn't have anybody for Carnegie Hall. And Andras happened to be in New York.
He was in the audience with his trumpet. And
it's kind of his. Yeah, he happened to be in New York conducting the Metropolitan Opera. It was a night off from the Met. And they said, hey, look, you want to do Mahler?
Can you imagine that? There's a great cartoon in The New Yorker that relates to that years ago that came out. The gentleman is standing in front of a gold curtain at the Met, and all these people are sitting there. And the gentleman says to the audience, can anybody here sing Tristan? Now, there's about 10 people in the world that can sing Tristan, right? Can you imagine Andras getting up and doing the Mahler? I mean, probing the depths of the most profound music. I mean, Mahler once said he was with Bruno Walter. They're driving through Switzerland, and Bruno Walter said, Maestro, aren't you going to look at the mountains? He said, no, I've composed them.
Oh.
This is what he was tackling, you know, Mahler. You know,
that's the voice of Ron Della Chiesa, if you don't know, and I'm sure you do, and he's here with Brian McCreath. I'm sorry, Marjorie.
I'm just curious about this, Brian McCreath.
Yeah.
You just mentioned that the BSO players are the best players in the world. What's the average salary for if you make it to the BSO? How much you make?
Gosh, I think their starting salary right now somewhere around 140.
That's
their base.
Yeah. So if you're like the first violinist, you're up there maybe to 200 grand, something like that.
The highest paid members of any orchestra typically, and I don't know their individual salaries, but the highest paid members are the concertmasters, followed by principal oboe.
Okay.
And that's then after that there's a principal scale, and then there's assistant principal scale, that kind of thing. So it is ranked.
And how about Nilsson's? What's he making?
Well, I don't know.
What's with you in the salary?
I'm just curious. I mean, if you are the conductor of a major orchestra like the BSO,
It's all over the map on that.
Okay.
But
we think it could be like maybe $500,000.
Probably more than that.
Now, Ron, before we get to more music,
groceries or anything.
Now, Ron, there's a question Marjorie wanted to ask you that I will ask. How much do you make, Ron? No, exactly. Give me a range within. Ron. You know, one of the things that is Keith Lockhart spends a little bit.
You know what I asked?
Why?
I asked, and then you can go with your question because, in general, I feel classical musicians do not get paid what they should be paid, and I'm glad to know that the classical musicians at the BSO are making the salary.
That's a whole other story.
We're talking about a very stratified job market.
Yes, we are.
We're talking about the high end, and then there's a gigantic drop off.
Okay. Well, and they're often more talented than people that make 10 times more than that.
That says Keith Lockhart has been here quite a few times?
Yes, he has.
Keith Lockhart
20 years.
Was the young wunderkind not so long, because you say 20 years ago. Now he technically works for Nelson's. I understand it's more, I guess, on paper than otherwise. Do you find that to be a stretch? The seat of the two famous conductors in town, one two decades, one a week or so, one is now sort of the semi-senior statesman. and one is the new kid in town. It's pretty strange, is it not, Ron?
Well, I think they both have different missions, you know. I mean, Keith doesn't conduct Mahler regularly, or Stravinsky. Keith does everything. I mean, that's his you know, his mission by the symphony. So you get two completely different conductors.
Is Boston big enough? I mean, again, you live in this world. We don't. We observe the world. But, I mean, these are two major presences in a fairly small, big town, Boston, greater Boston. I mean, can they coexist? I guess the answer is yes, because they live in different worlds, right? What do you think, Brian?
Yeah, definitely, because the BSO has a very particular mission for the Pops and a very particular mission for the symphony.
Right.
And they're both international brands, you know. So, yeah, we think of them as ours, and they're definitely, the whole organization is very directed at our local audience. But they're also very aware of their worldwide presence. And you know, Keith and Andrus will be involved in very different things. I was interested in Jeff's open letter, though.
Jeff Andrus.
To Andrus saying, how about doing a little bit of the Pops? I mean, that would be interesting.
How great would that be?
I don't know. I mean, that's for them to decide. But there's definitely room for these two guys.
It's he not could like do any... that if he brings his wife, you know, along to do pop stuff. I mean,
that would be beautiful.
You know,
wife, do we have any music? Do we have any sound from her?
Let's
I'd love to hear
to her
sing. Do we?
Yeah, because, you know, the thing is that Christine is going to be singing this Saturday, and Ron and I are going to be at the hall for this one-time performance. Unlike other BSO programs, this is a performance happening one time, just on Saturday night. It is completely sold out and has been for months, but we will be there, and you can listen on the radio. And you'll hear this voice. This is Christina Opelias in a part of a Puccini opera called Suor Angelica.
Her voice soars. She's a real Puccini singer.
Does that give you chills? Or
right there. Look
like
at the goosebumps.
She also defies the stereotype that a great soprano or mezzo-soprano has to weigh like 500 pounds. She's obviously...
What were you going to say, Ron?
I said... They're all beautiful, too. These singers today, it's no longer, you know, it's not over till a fat lady sings.
Yes.
They all look magnificent.
They do.
Anna Netrebko. They could be movie stars as well as great singers.
Well, and the person that's going to be singing with them, Jonas Kaufman.
Another one.
Well, that guy's a matinee idol look, you know.
Absolutely.
But he's an amazing tenor, too.
And how often do Nelson's and his wife perform together? Is this an odd moment, or is this a regular?
They're on the road a lot separately. I mean, you know, I talked to Bernadette Horgan, the press at the BSO, and she said, you know, Nelson's just conducted some Lohengrins.
Yeah.
They basically live out of hotel rooms. It's not a very glamorous life.
Yeah.
I mean, on the road, you're rehearsing sometimes and particularly in opera, with producers that might put you in something that you're very uncomfortable with because that's their idea of interpreting the opera.
Right.
So they never know who they're going. They know who they're going to work with, but it's a very demanding profession. You know.
Yeah. And that was Nelson's conducting, by the way.
I was.
That was a performance that Nelson's conducted of Suor Angelica. So they do team up at times, but they have very major careers on their own. So it's a little bit more. You have to arrange it pretty far ahead of time for the time.
You know, Puccini wrote a spaghetti western. Did you know that?
No.
The Girl of the Golden West, La Fanciulla del West. So last night I walked over to her and I said, you know, I love your Puccini, your Manon Lescaut. And I said, would you ever consider doing The Girl of the Golden West? She said, not right now. But, you know, she's got it all.
You know, you talked about the youth of Andrus Nelson, 35 years old. The story out of the New York Times talks about that a lot of other symphonies. New York Philharmonic, 44 years old, is the conductor. Philadelphia, Seattle, Los Angeles. We just got an email from a gentleman from Philadelphia, Danny, who says that the orchestra had been totally struggling until they got this new conductor, Yannick...
Nezes again.
Thank you. And that he's transformed this historical symphony back into something special, and the orchestra's completely his. So the youthful energy.
And I just heard that from an independent source, not connected with Philadelphia, but who really knows what he's talking about and says, you should be hearing Philadelphia these days. I have not lately. It's been many years since I heard the Philadelphia Orchestra. But I think Yannick Nezes again, who also did several years ago some terrific performances with the BSO, has totally re-energized the Philly Orchestra. And Gustavo Dudamel is sort of like the poster child for this whole younger generation of conductors in L.A. who has lit that town on fire.
So clearly the conductor matters hugely, hugely.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's this like for you? Ron, the new guy in town and the wife on the weekend and the What's the excitement level in your... I mean, I've been watching when Brian's been speaking or when the music's been playing, the look on your face, you can even see it in your body. I mean, what's it like for you? I'm serious. What's
you know what
like
I want? I want to do, and I want to make this announcement. I want to invite both of you to experience this.
I know.
To
come.
We really
come.
Have to do
I
it.
When
come.
he's conducting, and I'd like to hear your reactions on the air the next day.
We'll do that.
We should definitely do that.
There we go.
You know, and nice I know you missed, Marjorie, you're going to go to Tangle.
I was
going to
go. I never
busy.
Got there, but I did go to the symphony last year, and I was, what is incredible is that even they were doing Bruckner, is that correct?
Bruckner.
Pronunciation is difficult for me. Bruckner. And I would never listen to that in a million years. I don't like it. But if you're there in Symphony Hall and you hear it, it is a totally different experience. Even music you're not crazy about, because the acoustics, and you're right next to the orchestra, and it's just an amazing experience. I'm thinking to myself, why don't I go more often?
What's the demographic? Speaking of go more often, what is the demographic of the audience? Not the people who listen on the radio, but what's the demographic of the audience? Who goes?
I mean, I think it depends on which part of the week we're talking about, because, you know, a Friday afternoon is traditionally an older audience, and there are others on Thursday nights who are younger because they consider it the thing they do after work on Thursdays. Mm-hmm. I don't know about Saturdays. Ron is actually, he runs into young people out in the hall all the time.
I do.
He always comes
into the control room. I saw a lot of young people. I was surprised.
Yeah. And this is good.
College
because
kids.
How can we, you know, here he is now, this young conductor mm-hmm. who's got the goods. It's going to be like date night at Symphony. I've seen that. Yeah. I've seen these very attractive young couples, college or whatever, coming in. And, you know, after I leave the booth and I say, how did you enjoy the concert? And they say, wonderful. We've never been here before, but we're coming back.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And you can go out and have a cocktail during the intermission that and hang out before it begins. It's great.
And Andres is, this sounds cold in marketing, but it is true that Andres is of a generation that the BSO wants to have around, right? So his spirit. Now, there's a little moment that Mark Volpe shared with me.
Mm-hmm.
You may have read in Jeff Edgers' piece that Andres liked the golf carts out of Tangled quite a bit.
Even though he doesn't drive a car?
Well, that's what Mark and I talked about a little bit. And so here's what Mark said about Andres learning to drive a car at Tanglewood, perhaps.
Yeah, so we're encouraging him. We started with the golf cart. Figured he could do not that much damage there. And so he was like a little boy with a new toy. I'm sitting in my office and we're talking, and I told him about the Copeland bust that John Williams commissioned Penelope Jenks to do. And I told him about it. He said, I have to see it. And I said, okay, well, just go down there. He said, no, we're going to drive. I said, what do you mean drive? He said, so he got out of his golf cart. We drove maybe 30 yards, you know, to the opening where you could go no farther.
Yeah, so you have to take that thing down steps, I think.
Yeah, there's steps there, and I chose not to go over the steps in a golf cart with him.
Wait a minute. Did Nelson's go over the steps in the golf cart?
No,
oh,
they
okay.
stopped
just
right
wanted
before.
To be clear.
Yeah, he's
just
talking about
clear.
A part of the Tanglewood campus right behind the building where Mark's office is, and you can just walk down this beautiful path to a little statue of Aaron Copland, and Andres is like, I'm not going to walk. I'm going to drive my golf cart.
Yeah, what is the impact of having – I mean, I know you don't know yet, but I think you can generalize. What's the impact of having a young, approachable, totally human – conductor on the music, young music community, meaning, you know, when there's a great, when there's a great young basketball player, every kid wants to be that basketball player. Do kids say, oh my God, I 20 years ago, Keith Lockhart as a kid, I want to be Keith Lockhart. Yeah. I want to play in that orchestra. What impact does this have trickling down to young musicians?
I think you absolutely nailed it. I think in the same way in the world of opera, you know, there's these young singers we're talking about, like Jonas Kaufman, and Christina, you know, they inspire the younger singers who are studying voice. Well, if they can do it and they look good, you got to stay in shape. Andres is in good shape.
Yeah,
he's very athletic, and there's a charisma, or as the late George Frazier used to say, duende.
Remember that phrase?
Yes, great phrase.
You know, when he walks into the room, you just feel, and young people are going to be inspired, and goodness knows we need these young people coming in. They're the future audiences of tomorrow.
Well, I think, Jim, you're totally right that Christina and Andres will inspire younger musicians, but frankly, Boston's never had a problem populating itself with young, aspiring musicians. I mean, the music education.
Well, we had Roger Brown here a few weeks ago, who was terrific Berkeley, the president.
Boston is a magnet for people who want to pursue music. But I think the more important thing is not only does Andres sort of give the spark to that population, but the spark of simply experiencing music to those who aren't aspiring musicians, to those to whom classical music and orchestral music especially, is something that gives them an experience they really haven't had before.
Yeah.
You know, something that's beautiful and that takes you into a deeper part of yourself than sort of what we consume in media on most occasions, you know. And Andres has a way of ramping up the energy coming off the stage in a way, I don't know, it seems like it connects with younger people a little bit more. I don't know, whatever you think, Ron.
Yeah, and you can hear it in the ambiance in the hall when he's conducting.
Yeah.
There's a sound in the hall, you know, there's an excitement in the hall, the enthusiasm and the applause and the bravos and the cheers. With many times he gets standing ovations already, and he hasn't even really begun his, you know, his period, his tenure. But when we look at the programs coming up, Sibelius' Second Symphony, Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, Rachmaninoff's The Bells, Strauss's Don Quixote, Pathétique Symphony of Tchaikovsky, Bartok's Suite from the Miraculous Mandarin. Plus, he's going to be doing some contemporary music too, Brian.
Yeah, yeah.
What about this Saturday? What's going to be on the program this Saturday?
Oh, this Saturday is really fun because what they've done is they've set up as bookends a piece by Wagner that is a gorgeous piece, a Tannhäuser overture that's just the orchestra, and they'll end with a spectacular Italian piece that's just the orchestra. In between, they will have Wagner operatic arias with Christina and Jonas Kaufmann and Italian opera arias, like what we just heard Christina singing with Christina and Jonas singing together. So it's going to be a little bit more of a festive atmosphere, nothing really long, nothing as a massive big piece of music, but just a lot of things that that bring you all kinds of different, mostly German and Italian.
And then he ends with Respighi's Pines of Rome.
Right, right.
That's a great trilogy Respighi wrote. It takes you into Rome and you sit back and you're back in Rome. These are tone poems utilizing the full forces of the orchestra. So that's a nice way
amazingly
to cap it off.
So what time is this going to be on the radio here?
Well, so we're going to be on the radio at 7:30 because Ron here is going to be Mr. First Nighter. He's going to be in the hall talking to people.
I'll be there in black tie.
We're going to bring some atmosphere to you in the hall.
Do people still get dressed up?
Yes and no. I mean, okay. There's no real dress code. But
Yeah. I mean, I think for a special occasion like this one, certainly I think people are going to, you know, come out in their best. But on the other hand, honestly, I think it's a good thing that a lot of people feel comfortable showing up to Symphony Hall, not sloppy, but just, you know, they don't bother
casual
with the tie and everything.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing because, we don't want that to be a barrier to really experiencing this music, right?
So 7:30 is the so-called pregame show.
That's
what happens?
Have a lot of interviews. Ron will be talking to a lot of people in the hall itself. I'll have a couple of interviews, a little bit more from Mark Volpe.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have Andres as an interview during that time. And then as we get into the concert, we'll hear a little bit more from some of the audience members that we know are very excited about this. And we'll sort of be putting this all together at the time. It's going to be making a salad on the radio.
Can I tell you something? You two guys, I know Marjorie agrees with me. You bring an excitement
to this, even though we're
not in the hall, that is unbelievable. Oh. You know, it's like I'm tingling, literally, just listening to you to describe. I'm serious. Describe Saturday night when to see
you.
It's fabulous.
It's a little variation from Jim's fixation with Bruce Springsteen.
I wouldn't say I'm fixated.
Thunder Road.
I'm moderately fixated.
Because there is another kind of music out there, and you guys talk about it with such great
passion.
Wonderful. It's terrific.
You know, you've got to come to the hall. I really want you.
We promise you this season.
All right,
okay?
I'm going to call you up, and we're going to do it. We're going to go a nice night. No, what's the guy's name? Brookner.
No Brookner.
Other than that, I'll be there.
Ron and Brian, it is a thrill as always to talk to you. Good luck Saturday night.
Thank you.
Listening.
Thank you.
Brian McCreath is a host with 99.5 WCRB and a producer for the Boston Symphony Orchestra radio broadcast. Excuse me, Ron Della Chiesa, aka Radio Ron, is the host of the BSO radio broadcast, which you can hear Saturday night starting at 7:30. Thank you guys so much for coming in. It was great, great, great.
Our pleasure.
Oh, it was great to talk to you. And coming up, the NFL isn't the only place where domestic violence is an issue. Sue O'Connell joins us for that discussion next on 89.7 Boston Public Radio.